Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Ballava Giri Manadari. Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Ajamuna Tera Manchari Jamuna Tera Banachari Ajaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Ballava Giri Banadari Yasura Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Ajamuna Tera Banachari Jaya Radhe Shyam Radhe Shyam Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Nityalila Pravista Astatara Satasisi Manista Vangrace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Kijai Premsakoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhara Shivasiti Gaura Bhaktivedanta Kijai Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinatha Shama Kundarada Kundigita Govardhan Kijai Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Kijai Sri Saranga Murari Thakur Kijai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the Asama of the Bodhis. All glories to the Asama of the Bodhis. All glories to the Asama of the Bodhis. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 12, Text Number 42. Savitram Prajapatyam Cha Brahmam Katha Brihattata Vajya Sanchaya Salina Silocha Iti Vaigrihe Savitram Prachapatyam Cha Brahmam Kata Brihattata Vajya Sanchaya Salina Silocha Hiti Vaigrihe. Please chant.
Savitram
Uchahiti vagehe. Prajapatyam, to execute the vow for 1 year. Cha, and Brahmam, acceptance of the Vedas. Cha, and Atta, also Brihat, complete abstinence from sex life. Tata, then Vartha, vocation in terms of Vedic sanction. Sanchaya, professional duty. Salina, livelihood without asking anyone for cooperation. Sila uncha, picking up rejected grains. Iti, thus, vai, even though, grihe, in household life. Translation. Then the thread ceremony for the twice born was inaugurated, as were the rules to be followed for at least 1 year after acceptance of the Vedas, rules for observing complete abstinence from sex life, vocations in terms of Vedic injunctions, various professional duties in household life, and the method of maintaining a livelihood without anyone's cooperation by picking up rejected grains. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. During student life, the brahmacharis were given full instructions about the importance of the human form of life. Thus, the basic education was designed to encourage the student in becoming free from family encumbrances. Only students unable to accept such a vow in life were allowed to go home and marry a suitable wife. Otherwise, the student would remain a permanent brahmachari, observing complete abstinence from sex life for his whole life. It all depends on the quality of the student's training. We had the opportunity to meet an avowed brahmachari in the personality of our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Sriman Bhakti Siddhanta Goswami Maharaj. Such a great soul is called the Naishtiki Brahmachari. Om Agyanatama Dandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Miritam Minatasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangum Lam Jayati Agirim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Dinitarino Vancha Kapatiri Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Baheva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnevevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadha Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. Hare Krishna. So we have here the further details of many of the various aspects of creation performed by Lord Brahma. We may think to ourselves, what's the need for me to know all of this? These are actually quite detailed
selections of everything that makes up the universe. And yet we see that Vidura is clearly asking Maitreya for these details. So to use a modern quote, if it's good enough for Vidura, it's good enough for us. The understanding here is that there are different standards by which someone is going to live their life. And these details of this part of this chapter are giving us guidelines on how that's done, how one goes about, you know, doing these things, performing these activities, under what criteria. So the first point that's made here is the education of the brahmacharis. This education is, of course, based on the utmost importance of human life. And therefore, we find the phrase, or actually I should say instruction, atoto brahma jignasa, which means that in order to get out of the bodily concept of life, one has to increase attachment to or inquiry about the Supreme Brahman. The very nature of being in this body, the very nature of being in this world, is that we're attached. We think this is us, this package is very nice, it's got everything I need to enjoy, and I'm going to be very, very happy in this way. But the reality is quite the opposite. We have no control, we have no guaranteed happiness, we have no guaranteed enjoyment. It may or may not come, sukha dukkha. You know, happiness and distress, these things all come and go at their own will. It's not due to my efforts. So this instruction about the real purpose of our human life is the foundation of brahmachari life. It's an instruction given many, many times in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, multiple spots we find Prabhupada refers to this quote from the Vedas and gives us this guideline as to what the standard of human life should be. So for a brahmachari, this is their total focus. Now, while following brahmachari life, one accepts various types of samskaras or purification. There is, of course, as mentioned here, the upanayam or acceptance of the sacred thread. There's actually 16 samskaras or series of rites of passage in the course of the human being's life. It's worth taking note of these, I believe. You have your prenatal samskaras, the first of which is the Garbhadhan. This is a sacrament one takes when performing the union to beget a child. Then there's the Pumsavana, which is the rite one performs for having a healthy and good child. There's certain times in the pregnancy this is performed. Then there's Simontanayana, and this is the parting of the hair of the wife to give good energy for the birth of the child. Then the actual childhood samskaras are listed, and that's the Jatakarma, which of course is the rituals at birth, the establishing of the chart, the birth chart, based on the astrological times, the location of the nakshatras, the locations of the different constellations. Then there's the Namakaranam, the naming performing. This is done generally either the 11th day or maybe 1 month later, depending on the particular family tradition. The Namakarana, the name, is based either on the syllables that correspond with the particular constellation one's born under, or under the particular syllables of the incarnation for the month one is born under, or Vedas mentioned also according to family preference. So there's a wide window of how the Namkarna goes on. And then there's Nishkrama, which is taking the baby out for the first time. Hopefully taking the baby out for the first time to the temple, not to Lowe's or Publix. You know, that would be the preference. Bringing them here, having a particular ceremony performed, getting the blessings of the deities and the priest. Then there's the Chudhakarma, which is the shaving of the head. This can be done for boys or girls accordingly, or not, it's up to the individual. And then Karnaveda, many people ask about this, the piercing of the ears. Yes, piercing of the ears is bona fide in our tradition, and it is done. We have the great personality of Karna, born with these earrings in. That's a whole nother story. Then we have the educational samskaras. These are the Vidyaramba, which is the learning of the alphabet. The parents or the teacher take the hand of the student and help them form the first letters of the alphabet. And then, of course, as we're discussing in this verse, the Upanayam, which is the giving of the sacred thread, the recitation of the mantras. And Vedarambam, the beginning of one's Vedic study, this happens when one enters into the Gurukula and is trained under a teacher in studying the different principles of Veda. And then there is the Samvartam, the end of one's schooling or education, at which there is a grand ceremony. Not very much like the one we have at the university here that causes so much traffic backup and everything, but this is also a observance. The idea is correct that at the end of one's studies is a big event. And then, of course, the Vivaha. This is the marriage ceremony that takes place between the boy and the girl. And ultimately, the Anyeshti, which is the passing of the soul from this body, the death rites that are performed by the relatives and surviving family members. So these are the different samskaras that are there within the life of the human being that should be observed, at least minimally. We may not, according to time and circumstance, for instance, in the Antyeshti, the death ceremony, when the person dies by sunset, or if they die at night by sunrise, the body has to be cremated. Of course, if you live in the West, that's never going to happen. You've got a minimum of 3 days of legal configurations and entanglements that have to be resolved, and if there was some illness involved, then it can go even longer. So we have to adjust these things according to time, place, and circumstance. But these are the activities that qualify us as a human being and that help us to maintain the status of a human being of enlightenment, not just merely a two-legged cat or dog, like most of humanity is, but an actual thoughtful person that is seeking to purify and uplift their lives. Now, in regards to this verse, I was remembering a humorous statement that Srila Prabhupada made, and he said it with a chuckle one time during a class lecture. He said, "Is it a duty of every daughter to be married, and it is the duty of every son to remain brahmachari? So what to do?" And Prabhupada chuckled. So this is the hope, at least in broader society, that there should be some brahmachari. Of course, brahmachari doesn't come without grihasthas. That's the very practical understanding there. And we see that the actual stage of life of the brahmachari is given certain conditions of celibacy to be practiced. We have sometimes what we refer to now in our society as bachelors. But the strict brahmachari, as being spoken about in this, is described in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The life of celibacy of a brahmacharya involves the following. One should not think of women. One should not speak about sex life with women. One should not dally with women. One should not look lustfully at women. One should not intimately be found with women. One should not decide to engage in sexual intercourse with women. Nor should one endeavor for sex or actually engage in sex life. These are the standards of a first-class brahmacharya. So in this day and age that we live in, this is quite a challenge, quite an accomplishment. As Srila Prabhupada mentions, of course, this is, you know, more than 150 years ago, that this type of behavior, this standard, was found in the personality of his own spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now, in the purport to that verse, two verses where this is noted, Srila Prabhupada says, "To concentrate the mind, one must observe a life of celibacy and not fall down." This also applies to those of us in the grihastha ashram. One must undergo the austerity of voluntarily giving up sense enjoyment. One must then control the mind and control the senses, give in charity, be truthful, be clean, and be nonviolent. One should follow the regulative principles and regularly chant the holy name of the Lord. Thus, a sober and faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with the body, words, and mind. These sins are like the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by fire, although their roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. Interesting phrase. Remain to grow again at the first opportunity. And what is that opportunity? That opportunity is engaging in any of these more subtle types of desires. So we have to be very conscientious. What are we thinking? Because what we're thinking will determine what we're saying. And what we're saying will determine what we're doing. So we have to be conscious in this way. So we see from this standard of the sixth canto why brahmachari life is so rare. I don't think we have any brahmacharis in our presence right here, maybe one or two. But brahmachari life is not as frequent as it may have been during other time periods in history. But the fact is that one should lead their life in such a way that they are maintaining the same standard of principles. Now, if one is not able to maintain those vows, one is allowed to, without any disgrace and without any shame, to accept a wife. This was not always the standard in our fledgling society in the early years. I remember as a brahmachari when one of our godbrothers would take up the grihastha ashram. Oh my God, he's fallen down. He's going to hell. He'll never be a devotee again. Yet we see that 99.99999% of all those brahmacharis from those days are now grihasthas, because this is the practical ashram for us living in this day and age. Now, it mentions that if one is in that situation, they may take a suitable wife. Now, this is an interesting phrase which might be misunderstood, but a suitable wife indicates a suitable husband as well, because you can't have one without the other. This indicates that the elder family members or other seniors in one's community should be involved in the process. This is because the young person, and generally speaking, we're talking young people in this regards, but the young person may or may not be able to see things clearly and from a detached position when it comes to accepting a spouse. Their view, their desires, their ideals may get in the way of this. Even there's the one story with Srila Prabhupada where he complained to his father that he didn't particularly care for his wife. Prabhupada said, that's very good. When the time comes to renounce, it'll be easier for you. But the fact of the matter is that the arrangement between husband and wife is generally overseen by elder family members, elder community members that have a better vision than the young person who's, quite frankly, filled with many, many different desires at that point in their life. Another note mentioned here is that various professional duties in household life were given. This is under Lord Brahma's creation. Householders are held to an equally high standard. It isn't that, well, I couldn't make it as a brahmachari, let's just get married and have a good time at it. That's not actually the proper mentality. Married life is also about the tato brahma jignasa, understanding what is the foundation of my human life, whether I'm a brahmachari, sannyasi, Mahaprabhu, his famous verse, naham vipro nachana rapatanapi vaishna sudra, whatever ashram, whatever occupational duty one has, that doesn't matter. Gopi bhartu pada kamalayo dasa dasa. One should be the servant of the servant and the servant of the gopi damsels of Braj. This means making higher consciousness, enlightenment, the foundation of one's life. There are some interesting instructions given in the Vishnu Purana, which may or may not be applicable to our modern day circumstances, but I think they're worth noting here. For instance, let a respectable householder always worship the Lord, the fire, the brahmanas, the saints, the aged persons, the holy teachers, and the cows. Let a respectable householder observe the daily sandhyas and offer oblations to the fire. Let the respectable householder dress in unworn garments, use delicate herbs and flowers, wear emeralds and other precious stones, keep their hair smooth and neat, scent their person with agreeable perfumes, and always be handsomely attired, decorated with garlands of flowers. This according to time and circumstance. Let a respectable householder never appropriate another's property or address another person with the least bit of unkindness. I think this is something we could use much more of in our modern society. Let such householder always speak amicably and with truth, and never make public another's faults. I think we should take this out and make a huge sign and put it across the forehead of every person in the world. Let a respectable householder not desire another's prosperity, nor seek their enmity. A wise man will not form a friendship, nor walk in the same path with one who is disrespected, one who is a sinner, or one who is a drunkard, one who has many enemies, one who is a prostitute, one who is a liar or a slanderer. This is a very important principle for Sadhu Sangha, for understanding who to associate with and who not to associate with. Haridas Thakur explains to us four different types of association, even amongst Vaishnavas, that we respect and honor and take instruction from those who are seniors, that we reveal our mind, accept the revealing of the mind by those who are peers and our contemporaries, that we give guidance and direction to those that are juniors, and that there will be a certain class of those that we respect from a distance. In other words, we don't mix with them necessarily, and that's the type of people being described there. Matters of proper etiquette in public. In public, one should not clean their teeth, blow their nose, yawn without covering their mouth, clear their throat, laugh or cough loudly, emit wind with noise. In other words, if you can do it quietly, anyway. Nor bite their nails or put their beard into their mouth. So these may seem insubstantial, you know, what's the point? But if we look at these are actually proper etiquette that I would dare to say most of us were taught in our childhood by our parents how to behave publicly. Vishnu Purana confirms this. Let a person who is respectable never cross the shadow of an honored person, the image of a deity, or a heavenly luminary. Let such a person never travel alone through the forest, nor sleep by themselves in an empty house. Let them keep remote from hair, bones, thorns, filth, remnants of offerings, ashes, chaff, and earth wet with the water in which someone else has bathed in. Standards on how to keep ourselves clean. Cleanliness is one of the most primary principles of human life. Let such a person not receive the protection of the unworthy, nor attach themselves to the dishonest. Let such a person not tarry in the bed long after they have woken from sleep. This is a very important point. You wake, you get up. We saw this in the behavior of Srila Prabhupada. His servants would say many times when Prabhupada was laying down sleeping, he would be laying on his back with his hands folded over his chest. And when he woke, his eyes opened, he was immediately fully conscious and sat right up, began whatever activity had to be performed. This should be our standard. A prudent man, woman, should avoid, even at a distance, animals with tusks and horns, and should shun exposure to excessive frost, wind, and sunshine. You have to protect yourselves. When I was walking in Vrindavan recently, when I was there, of course, cows and bulls are everywhere there, all over the streets. And if a cow or a bull with significant horns approaches, I would always cross the other side of the street. They may be very peaceful, they may be very happy, but they got horns. I don't need to get close. I've been caught by those more than one time. I'm skipping through some of these. Let a person who is respected never associate with immoral persons. A wise man should never engage in a dispute either with their superiors or inferiors. Controversy and marriage are permitted only between equals. So if you're going to argue with someone, what was his name? Will Rogers, famous American writer and humorist, he said, you shouldn't wrestle with pigs. You'll both get dirty and the pig will enjoy it. Let a person never pass the temple with the building on their left-hand side. Let them not perform a ceremony of circumambulating any venerable object in the reverse direction. Now, the exception to that would be Mount Kailash. Mount Kailash, the abode of Lord Shiva in Tibet, has a very prominent place in four different religious traditions: the Vaishnavas, the Jains, the Buddhist, and the local kind of a tantric group. The tantric group circumambulates Mount Kailash in the opposite direction of the rest. So this is not considered appropriate in our tradition. Let a decent man, not spit or eject any impurity in front of the moon, fire, sun, water, wind, or a respectable person. I remember that in my early days of going around Govardhan Hill, I was traveling with my friend Vikram, who was a longtime resident of Govardhan. And for some reason, I had to spit, and I turned to my right and spit. And he told me, he said, you should never spit with Govardhan on your right. You should always spit to the left, to the street side. And when I had the good fortune to do Dandapat Parikrama of Govardhan, you very quickly understand that, no, you shouldn't spit in the street. Let a man not treat a woman with disrespect. This is a very important point. A man who is attentive to these duties of his station will not go forth from his house without saluting, offering respects to the flowers, the gems, the clarified butter, and the venerable persons in it. He who speaks wisely, moderately, and kindly goes to those worlds where the inexhaustible sources of happiness can be found. One who is intelligent, modest, devout, and has reverence for wisdom, their superiors, and the elderly goes to the heavenly planets. A pious person who suppresses anger and envy, who is benevolent to all, who allays the fears of others, secures as the least of his rewards the enjoyments in the higher planets. Couple more here. Let therefore a wise person ever speak the truth when it is agreeable, and when the truth would inflict pain, let them hold their peace. Let such a wise person not utter that which, though acceptable, would be detrimental, for it is better to speak that which would be congratulatory, although it would give exceeding offense to do the other. A considerate man will always cultivate in action, in thought, and in speech that which is good for all living entities, both in this world and in the next. So how do we attain these qualities mentioned here? Many of them, if we get past the particular time frame they may have been spoken in and look at the essence of the instruction, it's very important for us to have this. So Prabhupada tells us how in this purport, in one of the last sentences here. It all depends on the quality of the student's training. This is why it's so important that we have institutions to train our children, institutions that give them what is the proper standard of behavior. Vishwambar Prabhu and his amazing staff over here at the Bhaktivedanta Academy are doing such a service to not only our community, but to the greater society at large, both within ISKCON and outside, by training these children in what is proper behavior, both devotional and practical. So this is the essence. And we're very fortunate, as Prabhupada says, in this regards in his own circumstance, we are very fortunate to have such training from our own savior and deliverer, Om Vishnupad Sri Shimanesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So we're very happy to take these instructions to appreciate the quality of training that Srila Prabhupada has given us His books are there to guide us in all of these practical matters and all of these spiritual matters. We find both types of information there available for us. So we should always embrace that. So I'd also like today to speak about Saranga Thakur. Saranga Thakur was one of the very close associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although not as well known as, say, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, some of the other members of the Panchatattva. He lived in Mamagachi, and in the temple there in Mamagachi are his deities of Radha Gopinath. These are the deities that he worshipped, and they're still there. Now, in that courtyard, there is a Bakul tree, and legend has it that tree has been existing since the time of Saranga Thakur. Now, one day, Mahaprabhu came to visit Saranga Thakur, and he took note of this Bakul tree and noted that it was dying. It wasn't doing very well. Those of you that may have some gardening tendencies or plants or gardens or whatever, you know that this sometimes happens. So Mahaprabhu said to Saranga Thakur, he said, "Thakurji, this Bakul tree is dying. What are you going to do about it?" Now we can take this as a simple inquiry by Mahaprabhu, or we can look a little deeper into it and realize that if a living entity is suffering and we have some obligation, we should do something to mitigate that suffering. This is, of course, the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we give this opportunity for suffering living entities to be elevated. So in the context of this story, this tree is dying. Mahaprabhu inquired from Saranga Thakur, "What will you do about it?" Now, Saranga Thakur was a very intelligent individual. He said, "My dear Lord, besides your mercy, I don't see any hope for this tree." Now, this is also a very revealing statement, because in one sense, he's indicating that I can't save the tree. It's nothing I can do. I'm helpless, which is actually the circumstance of every living entity in the material world. We have no control over our circumstances. We have no free will. We're completely dictated by so many different restrictions in life. But Saranga Thakur mentions that, "My Lord, your mercy is all that will save this tree." In a similar way, the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Mahaprabhu is the only thing that will save all of us, that will give us that upliftment, allow us to come to the platform, as this verse in the Bhagavatam today was discussing, of real human life. So with that statement, Mahaprabhu walked over to the tree and he embraced the tree. I think the word used nowadays is a tree hugger. So we have no opposition to hugging trees. In Vrindavan, there are different forests which have ancient trees there, kalpavriksha trees, and one is encouraged to embrace those. There's one very nice forest just at the base of Barshana, which is a forest originally planted by Srimati Radharani and her gopi associates. She planted the first trees there, and many of those trees are said to be from that same time, that ancient, and one's encouraged to embrace those trees. One is encouraged to hug those trees and get their mercy, because these are trees that are able to fulfill all of our spiritual desires. So during this time, Saranga Thakur, he lived in Godrumadweep, which is one of the nine islands that represent the different types of devotional service. And he would go and sit on the bank of the Ganges and quietly chant the holy names of the Lord there, perform his japa meditation. And he was very, very strict. He was, as we were discussing last night, he was on that platform of Sudhanam. He was on that platform of understanding the pure spiritual potency without any nambas and without any nam aparad of the holy name. And by performing these activities, he developed many miraculous powers. Now, this is not intended, nor should it be the goal of one's japa meditation. I will do this and I will get great potency. I will become very famous. I'll become very well known, et cetera, et cetera. These are there. But sometimes these things come along what is that they say? Something about old age doesn't necessarily come gracefully, it just comes of its own accord, whether you want it or not. So sometimes in the process of our devotional service, we will get certain potency, certain abilities. The performance of different vratas or vows, also as mentioned in this verse, give one different benefits, which may or may not be of interest to the aspiring bhakta, but they may come nonetheless. So in this way, he had this kind of mystical potency. We see that mostly these types of abilities were the quality of the associates of Nityananda, particularly the Dvasa Gopals, the 12 cowherd associates of Nityananda. They all had amazing different abilities. Abhiram Thakur is a very long story, but once he had to get across the Ganges and no boat would take him, so he took his chudder and flipped it open, laid it on the water, and sat down on the chudder and floated across the Ganges. So, you know, Nityananda himself would sometimes swim with the crocodiles and wrestle with tides. So, you know, these types of qualities, mystical abilities, may have accompanied some devotees in the performance of their devotional service. Now, Saranga Thakur had no interest in disciples. He was fearful that if I accept disciples, there'll be some disturbance to my bhajan. We find a similar mentality in that of Lokanath Goswami. When Lokanath Goswami was approached by Narottam Das Thakur to please give him initiation, he said, I've taken a vow. Actually, Jiva Goswami told Narottam, don't think you're going to get initiated by Lokanath. He's taken a very strict vow. He will not accept any disciples. And so Lokanath explained this to Narottam. Narottam was very much upset by this. But he, you know, persisted and persisted and took up some little bit of menial service. And in due course of time, Lokanath felt the need to break his own vow to satisfy the vow of Narottam. So in the same way, Saranga Thakur did not want any disciples. Disciples means honor, praise, worship, etc., 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 glorification. This is seen as an impediment to one's mood of devotion, mood of service. But as Narottam quietly persisted with Lokanath Goswami, Mahaprabhu less quietly persisted with Saranga Thakur. Repeatedly encouraged him, no, you must accept disciples. You must accept disciples. So finally, Saranga Thakur relented. All right. Tomorrow, the first person I see, I will give them the divine mantra. Okay, Mahaprabhu is satisfied, but Mahaprabhu is keeping an eye on Saranga Thakur. So the next day, early in the morning, Saranga Thakur went to the Ganges to take his morning bath. By chance, a dead body was floating down the river and touched Saranga's feet. So Saranga picked up this dead body and he said, who are you? Rise up. And from behind Saranga Thakur on the bank, Mahaprabhu has been watching. He says, Saranga, say the mantra into his ear. So Saranga has agreed to Mahaprabhu's proposal. All right, first person I see, I'll initiate. And Mahaprabhu is not thinking, but they have to be a live person, they have to be of a certain age, they have to be of a certain caste. No, this is the first person, give him the mantra. So Saranga Thakur took the instruction of Mahaprabhu to heart. He embraced that instruction, and he repeated the divine mantra into the ear of this dead child. And the body became conscious again. The child came back to life. This is not the first time such an incident is this. In the home of Shiva Sangam, during one of the nighttime kirtans, one of the family members of Shiva's passed away and nothing was said. And when Mahaprabhu came to know about it, he went and touched the child and woke the child from his death. He said, why have you left? You're in the home of Shiva Sangha. You know, this is a... So at any rate, Saranga Thakur chanted this mantra into the ear of the dead child. The child came back to life, and he said, my name is Murari. I am now your servant. Please bestow your mercy upon me. This is the proper mood of a disciple. There was no concern, what is your caste, what is your background, what is my caste, what is my background. I have accepted you, you have given me the mantra, you are my teacher, now please instruct me what to do. Now, the story of this child Merari is quite interesting and actually does tie in with the verse today. That on the day that the boy was to be invested or given the sacred thread, the Upanaya, by chance he was bitten by a snake and he died. So you can just imagine the household turmoil. On one hand, there's this grand festival. The young boy is about to get his sacred thread. Everybody is happy. All the guests are in, you know. And somehow, before the ceremony can be completed, the boy is bitten by a snake, poisonous snake. Of course, sometimes poisonous snakes aren't detrimental. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that on Govardhan Hill, there are no snakes. He says, but if there are snakes on Govardhan Hill, they don't bite. But if they bite, they're not poisonous. But if they're poisonous, the poison has no effect. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives us that assurance about any snakes we may encounter in our parikram around Govardhan Hill. At any rate, so the snake bit the boy, Murari, and he departed. He died. Now, as was the custom, it says, they put the body of the boy on a raft and floated him down the Ganges. They didn't cremate him, you may ask. Samskara indicates that up until a certain age, if a child departs this world, they're not cremated. They're simply put into the Ganges, buried in the ground, whatever tradition one has in their particular place of residence. So this would indicate that the Upanaya ceremony did not take place when the child was 20 or 25 or something like that, but when they were quite young. This is common that at a certain age, as we mentioned the list of samskaras, in the educational side of that, which takes place when one is young, the Upanaya, the sacred thread is given, and the recitation of the divine mantras is given to the individual. So this is done when they're still a young boy. That gives a good solid foundation to the child as they're growing up, as they're going through their education, as they're training in the Vedas. So generally, we can say this takes place sometime before the age of 10, around the age of 10, like that. So the body was not burned. Instead, it was put on the raft, sent down the river, and thus in this way, the body came in contact with the most respected Saranga Thakur with his mandate from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, so this all takes place. Word spreads rather quickly, of course. Saranga Thakur has delivered this dead child back to life. And the word spreads back to the village where this child has departed from during the Upanaya ceremony and been placed on the raft to come. So the mother and father, they hear, so they are overjoyed. We can finish the Upanaya ceremony. We'll go back and get our son again. So they go to Mamaganchi, to where Saranga Thakur is staying. Actually, it's in Godrima Dweep at this point. So they go back to Godrima Dweep. And they say, okay, please come back home with us now. And the son says, no, I'm sorry. I will remain here in the service of that person who has given me life again. For now I am indebted to them. When we are born, we have a debt to the parents. This is explained in all the shastras. This is explained by Srila Prabhupada in numerous lectures. We have a debt to the forefathers. We have a debt to the spiritual authorities. We have a debt to our parents. But at the time of death, that debt is completed because there's no more ability to fulfill it. So now the body has been brought back to life by a different person who becomes the spiritual father because he's brought that body back to life with the divine sound vibration. So he now becomes the father to which the obligation is owed. So the boy tells his parents, I'm not coming back home. My obligation there is finished. Now I have an obligation to serve Saranga Thakur. So this is the backstory, the forward story of this Murari Chaitanya, as he became known, is that he became quite attached to Nityananda. And there was an external consciousness present in Murari Chaitanya's body that was transcendental beyond any realm. He would sometimes go into the forest. Now keep in mind, this is Mahaprabhu's time, so there's forests everywhere, not like there are today where there's hardly any trees. Actually, during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Braj Mandala Parikram, one could walk from Vrindavan to Govardhan and never see the light of the sun. There were so many trees. Now you can drive from Vrindavan to Govardhan and maybe you'll see a tree. At any rate, so there were all these forests, so there were tigers. And he would sometimes go into the forest and chase the tigers. You know, sometimes you might chase a cat or a dog just in a playful mood. And so he would chase tigers like that. And sometimes he would jump onto the back of one of these tigers when he caught them. And due to his potency, these tigers would become very docile. Not like tigers. If you jump on their back, they're generally not having any of it. But, you know, they would very, very docile to have him there. Sometimes he would play with a python on his lap. Now, playing with snakes is one thing. I have an associate I work with that is known for his snake collection. And I remember one time he brought one of his snakes wrapped around his neck into the store, and he was promptly told by the manager, get the snake and get out. So not everybody's very fond of playing with snakes. At any rate, but playing with a python, what does a python do? A python crushes you. So he's playing with pythons on his lap, you know. And not just playing with them, but playing with them in great delight. So this was all understood to be the mercy of Avadhuta Mahajan, Nityananda, that he could play with tigers and snakes like this, you know. Some of the incomprehensible activities of the associates of the Lord. Murari Chaitanya would often forget himself in conscious being absorbed in the bliss of the holy name. Sometimes he would be in the water underneath for 2 or 3 days at a time with no suffering of any kind of bodily difficulty. He would almost appear to be insentient, not connected to the activities of his body. This was due to the intense prowess of his devotional focus. Imagine we have trouble focusing just for, you know, 2 rounds, 5 rounds, 16 rounds, whatever number of rounds we're chanting, you know, just to focus our mind that way. We sit for the Bhagavatam class and we might be able to listen for 10 or 15 minutes and the mind's off wandering somewhere. Imagine being so detached from the physical input and the physical body that you could sit underneath water for 2 or 3 days at a time. Subhara Muni had this ability, but even his ability to do so was hampered by observing some fishes engaging in their activities. So Chaitanya Bhagavat concludes this description of Murari Chaitanya as, how can one understand the devotional sentiments of such a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Now, Kavi Karnapur, in his Gonadesha Deepika, gives us the identity of Saranga Thakur. We might ask, why should I be concerned with the writings of Kavi Karnapur? I mean, aside from the fact that he and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur are the two gold standards for who was who from Krishna Lila to Gaura Lila, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Gitavali writes the following. You should all remember Srila Kavi Karnapur and his family members, who are all sincere servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You should also remember the father of Kavi Karnapur, Srivananda Sen. Always remember that those Vaishnavas who strictly follow the path of Rupa Goswami and who are absorbed in bhajan should be respected. If you actually want residence in the land of Braj, then you must remember all the Vaishnavas who are the followers of Rupa Goswami. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes it very clear how important Kavi Karnapur is. So Kavi Karnapur writes in his Gaura Gonadesha Deepika, Braje Nandi Mukhiyasat Sadya Saranga Thakura Pralada Manyate Kaschin Mat Pritta Nasa Manyate. The Braj Brahmani Nandamukhi Devi appeared as Saranga Thakur. Some people think that Saranga Thakur is an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. My father, Shivananda Sen, does not agree with this idea. So here we have not only our gold standard, Kavi Karnaport, giving this information, but we understand from historical perspective that these ideas that he was able to understand about the identities were also confirmed by his father, Shivananda Sen, a very highly placed associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is further information to remove any concern. Well, this is just one man's opinion, Kavi Karnaport. As I mentioned, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also gives similar identities in his own book on this subject. And we find that these were not just manifested ideas from Kavi Karnaport's own realizations, but they were confirmed through his father, Shivananda Sen, who associated with all these individuals. So this is the importance of consulting with other devotees, of not just thinking our own thinking is the end result. Saranga Thakur himself, of course, was a very empowered preacher of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's principles, of his instructions, of his devotional practices. And descendants to him and his disciples are still found in the village there. So this is one of those places where, in very timely manner, at the publication of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada mentions how to get to this different temple and place. You take this railway line and get down and take this bus line and then take a rickshaw to here. Prabhupada's very detailed in how to find these places. Of course, nowadays, the method of getting there is a little more simple. But at any rate, the beauty and simplicity of Prabhupada's descriptions of how to find these places. One can go there by rickshaw or tram from Navadvip. By train, one should go north to Katwa and get down at the second stop, Bandar Tikuri, and then one can take a rickshaw and easily find the temple. Sometimes he'll say it's at such and such crossroad on the opposite side, you know, like that. So Saranga Thakur is also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as one of the main branches of the tree of Lord Chaitanya's devotional service. On the same branch with him are Ramdas, Kavidat, Gopaldas, and Bhagavatacharya. So in this way, we have a little bit of understanding. Some of our acharyas, we have great detail found about their lives, and some of them we have a little bit less detail there. Saranga Thakur is one of those that we have not so much detail about, but what we do have is extremely instructive, and we should be very knowledgeable and attentive to his example in our devotional practices. So we thank you very much for this opportunity to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam and Saranga Thakur. If anyone has any comments, questions, corrections, I see the hands are up already. Pundarik Prabhu, I saw you first. Oh, just one second. Let me adjust my hearing devices for greater speech clarity. Ah, there we go. Yes.
No, I was just wondering where the list of the qualities are that you were reading earlier, the qualities, the behavior of one that you read earlier, you were reading some
activities of a householder?
Yeah.
That's from the Vishnu Purana, third canto, third Vishnu verse, Purana. Third chapter, rather. Sorry.
All right, yeah. Thank you.
Prabhuji?
He's talking there about the Upanaya Gayatri Samskara, and sometimes I've seen different devotees wearing different number of threads. Mm-hmm. On their Brahman thread. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada wore 9, so mm-hmm. It's 3 sets of 3. And generally speaking, the Kshatriyas wear 2 sets of 3, and the Vaishya wears just 3. So the thing is, Prabhupada's standard that he set it as a Brahmana, because by Diksha he became a Brahmana, and the thing is that he wore 9. So
is there a question?
No, it's just sharing.
Okay. All right, thank you. Ragatmaka? And then you, Prabhu.
You said that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also has a book identifying the Gaura Lila personalities.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
What is the name of that book?
It's twice as long as Gaura Gonadesha Deepika in title. Sri Gauranga Gana. And I can't remember the rest of it. I'll look at home and send you the title to it. It's available and can be. And the nice thing about that book was introduced to me by, what's his name there in South Africa, the sannyasi? His name starts with a P. Prabhavishnu, no, not Prabhavishnu. Parthasarathy, yes, thank you, Parthasarathy. He introduced me to that book, and in the back of that book, there's a table that lists the associates of Mahaprabhu, and then lists Gauranga Desha Deepika and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's book, and does a comparison. 98% of them are right on the mark. There are a couple of differences of opinion, but I'll send you that if you remind me later
and
in the day.
And Murari Chaitanya, who was he in Krishna Lila?
Is he in that book?
Even in Karnapur, Kavi Karnapur's.
I'm sorry?
Murari Chaitanya, was he in Kavi Karnapur's book?
Murari Chaitanya is not mentioned in Kavi Karnapur's book, no.
Okay.
No. All right, we'll finish there. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Prabhu. Yes. Uh-huh. One more question? All right, two more questions. It's early, we'll allow you to. Go ahead, Prabhu.
Yeah, so like you said, like you talked about the importance of brahmacharya and like how important it is to become a brahmachari. And it's recommended that you should be a nashtik brahmachari. Like for life, we should remain as a brahmachari. But if we cannot, then it's better to become grihastha. So like in today's age, like how we start in schools, like the teachers are more of cheaters, and how we've been cheated, and like how they've been so open about casual sexual activities, and it's okay, it happens, and this happens, and that happens. It's okay to lust after a woman, and for a girl, it's to lust after a man. And like, my question is that, like since, like you said, the importance of quality training, like it depends on the quality of training. So like people like me who are unfortunate, who did not get that quality of training, how can I proceed with my life? Because I don't think I'd be a good brahmachari, given that how like the tendency, the desire to enjoy this material world is currently stronger than the desire to serve Krishna. And
My first question to your question would be, who says these things are okay? Nobody I know. They're not okay if we have these fall downs. They may be a circumstance that we find ourselves in, and we may have to pick ourselves up and continue back on, but that doesn't make them correct or acceptable. We should understand this is not the proper activity, first of all. Second of all, I would also disagree with the fact that you don't have the benefit of the same training that we had. You have the same access that we had to Prabhupada's lectures, to Prabhupada's books, to Prabhupada's devotees, to Prabhupada's sincere disciples that are pushing on. So we have that same access, regardless of whether we were born into the movement, whether we were initiated by Srila Prabhupada back in the 70s, or whether we're just coming to Krishna consciousness now. This is the wonderful thing about ISKCON, is Prabhupada's legacy, Prabhupada's instructions, Prabhupada's example are still prevalent. They're still available to anyone. So you have that same training. Third thing is that, yes, material desires are very strong with you now. You're young. Wait till you get old, they'll be considerably less, just by circumstance. So don't think that, well, this is the plight I've got for now. But taking the effort, making the steps to set those material desires aside, you know, there's two ways to deal with the mind. One's just shut the mind down. No, we're not doing it. Well, the mind's going to rebel.
Yeah.
Another way is, okay, later. Haridas Thakur found this method very helpful in dealing with the prostitute that was sent by the Khan to drag him down. She would arrive and he would say, okay, my japa's not quite done. You just sit here. When I finish my japa, then we'll satisfy you. Now, her idea of him satisfying and his idea of him satisfying her were completely different, which ultimately, after sitting three nights hearing the holy name from Haridas Thakur on the Sudhanam level, she became purified. So maybe we can shut the mind down. Maybe we just tell them, okay, a little later. Let's just put that on the shelf for right now. And then we continue with our devotional activities, and eventually the mind, all right, okay, I surrender. You know, Saranga Thakur. No, I'm not going to take disciples. No, I'm not going to. All right, I'll take disciples. So like that. Second question.
What do you mean by putting it on a shelf? Like, because our mind is really bad. It'll come back after 3 days, and it'll force you even harder. That, hey, you promised me. Now you have to.
Struggling with the six senses, which include the mind. It's a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, the senses and the mind, but we have to check them. You know, just like we don't go to the restaurant and eat just anything there. I work in a place where we've got a break room, and somebody's always bringing some kind of food and leaving it out for everyone. And, okay, it may look tasty, sometimes not, but it may look tasty, but no, I know this isn't offered, this isn't prepared properly, this has probably got unmentionable ingredients in it, so no. So, you know, we have to learn to restrict the mind and senses. That's the reality. We can't just go through life like, as I said, two-legged cats and dogs, just, you know, doing whatever the senses dictate to us, whatever the mind dictates. Mm-hmm. It takes some effort. It takes some practice. And by that practice, it then becomes our nature. First, we desire to do something, then we do that thing, and then we do it enough that it becomes our nature so that we don't have to think about it. We don't have to make an effort to control the senses or restrict it. It just becomes who we are. Ekadasi. Everybody knows Ekadasi. We just don't eat grains and beans. Okay, we may not like it, we may like it, we may embrace it, but it becomes just, okay, it's Ekadasi, we just don't do it. Oh, somebody just brought some cookies by. Oh, great. Oh, it's Ekadasi. Okay, I'll have to wait a day. No harm, we wait a day. Okay, mind, you can have them, it's the next day. You know, so like that. It just takes some association is how we get this kind of dridhavrata, that one-pointed determination to embrace the devotional principles, good association. Yeah, as mentioned in those list of things from the Vishnu Purana.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you all very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Saranga Thakur ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.